A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I'm Dori Shafrir.
And we're not experts.
No, we're not. But we're two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Indeed we do, Dori. And if you would like to learn more about us or the serums we like, you can visit our website, forever35podcast.com, for links to everything we talk about on each show. You can follow us on Twitter at forever35pod and Instagram at forever35podcast. And you can join the Forever 35 Facebook group where the password is serums. And there is also a Forever 35 subreddit. Whew.
It's true. If you want to reach us directly, you can do that too. There is a number, 781-591-0390, where you can leave us a voicemail. You can also text us at that number. And you can email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com. You may also email us a voice memo.
Did you just really say memo?
I did.
That was cute. That was cute. And if you like listening to us gab here on the show, we really appreciate positive reviews on ye old Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. It helps us, I don't know, makes us feel good about ourselves.
And that's what this is about.
That's really why we're here.
Yep.
But sincerely, it does help people find our show and get information about our show. So thank you for doing that. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Well, Kate,
I just spent like an hour removing my fake nails.
Oh,
it was a lot of work to get them off.
Wow. How did you get them off?
You are supposed to soak in warm water. I mean, you can use, what's that stuff called that I can't remember, that nail polishy stuff?
Acetone.
Yep. You can use acetone, but that ruins the fake nail. So if you want to keep the fake nail to use again, you soak in warm soapy water and just kind of pry. And it was a journey.
But that takes a long time.
It took a long. The nails were very quick to put on, but it took about an hour to get every single one of them off.
Wow. Okay. That is good to know for anyone contemplating going on this nail journey like Kate Spencer.
Going on the fancy press-on nail journey with me. But I'm going to do it again. I liked them, I have to say. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Big fan. But I'm very tired. That's like kind of all I could muster today in terms of doing things because it's been a wild ride over here in my house. So
yeah, what's been going on?
Well, I've been on a some tight work deadlines. So I'm you know, very stressed. And my husband is also on work deadlines, and then we've got our kids here, and then my youngest daughter tested positive for strep throat yesterday. So that was exciting. But she does not have COVID. I found that out a couple hours ago. So that is
great.
Good news. Yes. But, you know, there was the whole like, oh, this child is really sick. How did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? It's a mystery, a masking mystery. But she somehow got sick and we had to go to the doctor and she had to get like the really mega nostril COVID tests. And a strep test. It's like the two worst poking tests.
Yuck.
Especially for like a 7-year-old, you know?
It's not fun.
Not fun. She had not had the super invasive nostril test yet, but she did it. Mm. She did a great job. But she has strep throat. Hopefully the rest of us are not going to get it. She's on antibiotics. But that was just a little bit of a like, oh boy, you know, and plus, you know, having to go to the doctor and go to the doctor when you have a cough and a runny nose is, like you, there's a whole extra level of procedures when you are sick and going to the pediatrician. So that was just interesting. That was just part of our, but I'm, you know, grateful she did not test positive for coronavirus and I'm grateful for antibiotics and our access to them. But I will say, like, this last week I've been working, you know, like working all day and then like doing dinner and putting people to bed and then going back out and working for like 2 to 3 more hours. And I basically like don't know how to take care of myself when I'm under a lot of professional stress. Does this happen to you?
Yeah.
Like last night I had like crackers for dinner. I can barely wash. I just kind of, all the like things I do that kind of calm me and like make me feel good, I just am like, I can't do them. I don't have time. I don't know. Yeah. I go into this like weird survival mode that doesn't feel good. So today I'm like exhausted and I like think I'm going to go to bed at like 7 o'clock. I'm so tired.
You know, I went to bed early last night and then was up at like 5:15.
Ooh, no.
And like tried to go back to sleep and I just couldn't. And it does make me think sometimes that like our bodies are just like, no, this is actually the set amount of sleep that we want you to get.
Yes.
And like if you try to get more sleep by going to bed early, we're just going to wake you up super early.
You know, my body does this too and it like makes me angry. But
it's annoying.
I do think you're on to something. Like there are some nights when I'm really tired and I'm like, I'm off to get 9 hours of sleep. And then after 7 hours, my body's like, hello.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's annoying. I'm glad you got some rest though. I'm glad you tucked yourself in early.
I did. I tucked myself in early.
Well, I'm excited for the update that you're going to share with us today because you have found a way to give back during this challenging time.
What a nice intro. Thank you, Kate.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so I'm helping people here in Los Angeles make vaccine appointments. Some people who I only know like through other people started something called Get Out the Shot LA. And they have a website. It's www.gotsla.org. So getouttheshotla.org. And they have a Facebook group. And they set it up kind of inspired by similar movements in New York and other places where, broadly speaking, kind of younger, more technologically savvy people were helping seniors and other people who were maybe not super familiar with how all the vaccine appointment websites worked, didn't have the time to like figure it out, sort through, wait to get the appointments. And so kind of started booking appointments for other people. And it's become a little bit more kind of formalized. I mean, it's all very ad hoc. It's not like it's all volunteer. There's no like budget. People just kind of decided to do this. But it is a really easy way for technologically savvier people to help other people get vaccinated.
Yeah.
So it's cool. Like they set up this hotline or like, no, they call it a warm line. Sorry. They set up this warm line where you call and leave a message and you just kind of tell them who you are and, what sort of eligibility category you're in. And then someone calls you back and takes down all your information and then finds you a vaccine appointment, essentially. It's not really intended for people who kind of just want like a concierge vaccine appointment service. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's really meant for people who, for whatever reason, do not have the resources. Again, time, technology, know-how, language barrier, whatever it is, to make the appointment themselves. So it's pretty cool.
That is very cool, especially because there's been a lot of disparity in terms of who can get the vaccine and who the vaccine is reaching and who needs it the most. I think it's really important, the work that you are doing, Dory.
Oh, thank you, Kate.
I admire it. And we should clarify, this is not a group of like for people who are quote unquote vaccine chasing. This is like a group of people serving the community of eligible recipients of the vaccine.
Yes, exactly. And we are instructed to gently turn away people who are not eligible and, you know, say that they can check back when their eligibility tier comes up. And, you know, I just want to say, if there isn't something similar in your city, start one.
Yeah, I was amazed at how quickly this got off the ground.
Yeah.
I'm in the group, the Facebook group, but I have not participated as a volunteer yet. So
yeah, like people just kind of decided to do it and got it up and running. So I think it's totally something that if this sounds, you know, interesting to you and you want to help people in your community, I think this is totally within your grasp to do. Especially now, because actually I was thinking about this because our guest today, Julia Tertian, talks about volunteering kind of as great self-care. And in-person volunteer opportunities are kind of limited now.
Yeah.
So this is a great way to get involved. You just need to be able to make phone calls.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good suggestion, Dory.
Thanks, Kate. And, you know, I think there's other people who have been figuring out logistics of like getting people to their appointments who might not have transportation. That is not what this is. This is kind of strictly focused on just finding and making the appointments.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just wanted to mention it because I just started doing it. It's fun. And, you know, you get to help people out.
Did you get to chat with anyone? Like, did you get to talk to the people who you're trying to find shots for?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get like super chatty because you do have to like get a lot of information.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, you just kind of have to ask, because when you make an appointment, they ask for a ton of information.
Yeah.
Ugh. So that's the other thing too, is like, it's nice to be doing it sort of under the auspices of, even if it's an ad hoc organization, because you want people in the community to trust you to give you all this personal information. Like, they're giving you their date of birth and their address and their insurance number. And you know what I mean? So
yeah, that's a lot of info.
It's a lot of info. So yeah. So I would check out gotsla.org if you are interested in learning more, whether it's for Los Angeles or for your own city.
If any listeners are doing this, I would love to hear about their experiences. Maybe they can share some resources as well.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Bring on the vaccine appointments.
Yes. And soon we're getting to teachers here in Los Angeles, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
By the time this airs,
teachers will be eligible.
So if any teachers need help, contact Dory. She'll find you an appointment.
Yeah, just go to gotsla.org and there's a thing up top that says, I need help getting a shot.
That's awesome.
And you can either call or fill something out on the website.
So, Dory, you mentioned volunteering and our guest today.
I did.
And we had the pleasure, the immense pleasure of getting
immense
to talk to
pleasure.
Julia Tertian for an hour. We really wouldn't let her go.
No, we wouldn't.
She was
kind enough to indulge us.
Yes. We're like, wait, one more thing.
One more question. And then we were like, wait, that reminds me, one other thing. But she's so cool.
And just a beacon of compassion and kindness and community. And her new book, her new cookbook, which is called Simply Julia, is just really wonderful. And she even writes about volunteering in her cookbook.
Yeah. She does.
It's a really moving cookbook. I'm going to try one of the recipes from it this week, actually. I'm going to be putting some of them into my meal plan.
Please enjoy our interview with Julia. Be inspired by her cookbook. She's truly wonderful.
Thank you. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. I've drawn the line.
Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift. All while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there. Especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s. But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
Our guest today is Julia Tertian. Julia, welcome to Forever 35.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And I am 35 years old. I feel like I should share that. So.
Wow.
Perfect.
We nailed this.
Perfect podcast for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to read your bio and then we will just get into it.
Great. Yeah, that's never not awkward.
I know. Sorry.
No, go for it.
It's a great bio, though. Julia is the best-selling author of Now and Again, which was named the best cookbook of 2018 by Amazon and an NPR Great Read. Feed the Resistance, named the best cookbook of 2017 by Eater. And Small Victories, named one of the best cookbooks of 2016 by the New York Times and NPR. She also hosts the IACP-nominated podcast, Keep Calm and Cook On. And her new cookbook, Simply Julia, came out on March 2nd. And Kate and I both loved it, but we will get to that in a bit. And she also sits on the Kitchen Cabinet Advisory Board for the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History, is a member of God's Love We Deliver's Culinary Council, and is the founder of Equity at the Table, an inclusive digital directory of women and non-binary individuals in food.
All accurate.
Phew. Okay, good. Well, you know, like I said, we're so thrilled to have you on. We love your cookbook. But we do always like to start our interviews by asking our guests about a self-care practice that they have. So do you have something that is kind of a regular self-care practice for you?
I think cooking is for me very much, and that's part of my daily life. And
yeah.
Two other things. Am I allowed to name more than one? Is that okay?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You can name 25. Go for it.
So the two other things that come to mind, I'm a big walker. I take a lot of long walks. That's a big thing for me. Like, I feel very, I notice when I don't. Like, it feels different. So that's a big thing for me. And lastly, I spend a lot of time very horizontal on my couch watching a lot of Bravo. And I think that is really important. And it's a big part of my life, too. And it's a way I definitely, like, sort of discharge some energy, I would say. So those are my three. Cooking, walking, Bravo.
Any particular Bravo shows?
Oh, Below Deck. Big time, like every single version. Some of the Real Housewives, but not all of them, and not because I think one is better than the other. I've just, like, some I've watched forever, and some I just have it, and I'm like, oh my god, it's too much to catch up on, and
it's
it stresses me out. Yeah. So, but yeah, those are like the main two.
Can I inquire about the healing powers of Below Deck? Because I feel like this is a show I've never seen it, but this is a show that I think is a passionate favorite for people. Can you tell us what it's about? Like, just what it gives you?
Sure. I mean, we'll probably never talk about my cookbook, but that's fine. I'd rather talk about Below Deck.
Six hours later.
To give me, like, a time limit. Okay. For anyone who's listening who hasn't seen it, Below Deck is basically a contemporary sort of upstairs, downstairs reality show. It's about the staff on super yachts, and it's a reality program, so these cameras follow them around, and each episode is like a different charter, so like different people coming to stay on the boat for like a few days. So you get these, it's sort of like natural episodes because each time it's like this different group of people and their characters, you know, anyone who's like renting out a super yacht and wanting to have that filmed for television, like that's, I think, a certain group of people. And then with the staff, you're having, you know, I don't know how many people are on it. Let's say like six or eight people or something. And, you know, they're living in these like close quarters and they're doing this hard work. And that's just like built in drama. And I personally gravitate towards it because I used to work for a long time as a private chef, and I never did on boats. But I've met some people who have, and like, I feel like boat people are just characters. So you're like watching these just like natural characters. So I feel like I had my experience being a private chef. So I feel very like, I don't know. It just like speaks to me or something. It makes me grateful that I'm out of that world. But I don't know, at the end of the day, it's like you're just watching people just try and get through the day. And, you know, it's about their relationships and stuff. And I mean, it's just silly, but I don't know. I enjoy it. I think watching other people's drama unfold makes me just feel relaxed. And I don't know what that says about me, but I know I'm not alone because these shows are really popular. So
you're not alone.
Thoughts. Yeah.
Well, and also it's always interesting. Like you create, like cookbooks are such a big part of self-care for people. And so it's always interesting. It's cool that cooking is also included in your self-care practice, but I also love hearing what self-care makers then do for their own care.
Yeah. I mean, I spend this really wonderful, like relaxing, like often meditative time in my kitchen. I feel really confident when I'm cooking. I feel really calm. That's what I want everyone to feel. And that's what I try to get across in my books. And then I think the thing I don't share is I then take that food and I bring it over to the couch and my wife and I turn on Bravo and that's where it gets consumed. So I'm sharing like the, you know, high low. So
I love that. 'Cause in Simply Julia, I feel like there's a moment where you're like, I forget exactly where and how you said it, but you're like, I'm at my most at ease and happiest when I'm just like in the kitchen cooking and there's music playing. And you set up such a beautiful vision that like last night I was making my HelloFresh dinner box and I put on music and I was like, I'm going to relax. And it kind of worked. Is that your space? Like, how do you set up what elements are needed in your cooking space in order for it to be a space of self-care? Or is that just your most natural environment to be in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's my most natural environment. Like my home kitchen is my favorite kitchen. But I feel very at home in most kitchens and it's, you know, always where I want to be. But in terms of like the specific things I have in my kitchen that make me feel, I don't know, as calm and collected as I do in that space. I mean, some of those things are, we have a lot of natural light in our kitchen. There's a lot of windows and very lucky to have that. And I think that makes a really big difference. There's like a lot of sunshine, you know, good vitamin D. My wife and our two dogs are often within view. We have like a big table in the kitchen and she's usually there, or our TV room where we watch all the Bravo that is like open to our kitchen. So that's kind of, you know, like the center and like the heart of our house. So I'm seeing her and our dogs, you know, the three people. Oh gosh, I just called my dogs people.
The three beings.
I feel like I'm turning red and I'm grateful it's a podcast. The three beings that I love so much, I'm like seeing them. So that's really nice. And yeah, I have a lot of space in my kitchen, which is such a luxury. So things aren't piled on top of each other. So I really appreciate that. And I think the thing that I most enjoy, yeah, the thing that makes me feel the calmest when I'm cooking has nothing to do with things at all, nothing to do with these objects or atmosphere. It's when I have time and I'm not, even if it's a short amount of time, but if there's no rush. And my favorite thing is cooking, not actually like a specific meal right when I'm going to eat it. I mean, I enjoy doing that, but I love, like on the weekend often, we're part of a CSA. So, you know, we pick up produce from the farm nearby and like, I love bringing that home and like cleaning a bunch of stuff and like cooking a bunch of stuff and then putting in the fridge. And I'm like, okay, future self, like I've got you taken care of. And that kind of cooking that has no deadline attached to it and feels like I'm taking care of me and my wife tomorrow, but I'm doing it today, like that feels really good. So it's like just time is something that I really value.
That's one of the tips you have in your book that I was like, oh, that's so smart. Like if you're roasting a chicken, roast two.
Yes, 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 yes.
just like having those things on hand is like so important, of course. But yes, let's get to your cookbook. And actually, I mean, why don't we start there? Just in terms of some of the things that you recommend. I loved the organization of your cookbook. You have all these great lists. It's very user-friendly, which some cookbooks aren't. I will also say I really appreciated that your recipes were not super complicated. They had, you know, not a ton of ingredients. All the ingredients are things that you can easily get. And, you know, it's just, it's really helpful. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome. Yeah.
I have a wonderful list that resonated with me called 7 Ways to Use Leftover Buttermilk, which I feel like this has been needed forever. So thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so pleased all these things resonated for both of you, because they're things I obviously put like a lot of thought into. And my goal with this book, I mean, with all my work, but especially with this book, was just to be as useful as possible and, you know, user friendly, and also just, yeah, all the things you said, just like super, super functional, and respond to questions that I've been asked a lot, that I just hear get asked a lot. One, for example, is I feel like I've heard so many people talk about they've made, you know, a cake recipe or a cornbread recipe or something like that, that called for 1 cup of buttermilk, but buttermilk doesn't come in cup bottles.
Right.
It comes in a quart container, which is 4 cups. So you use the 1 and then you have 3 cups, and it's sitting there in the back of your refrigerator and you have no idea what to do with it. And I've noticed that. And I just thought, let me share some ideas, because buttermilk is a fantastic ingredient that can be used in so many different things. And it also like keeps forever. Like the expiration date, it, like, doesn't really mean anything. Like it keeps so well. I mean, like, don't push that too far. Like, I don't want anyone getting sick.
3 years just later.
I heard on a podcast that Julia Tertian said I could use this old buttermilk.
Vintage.
This is the buttermilk we use every Christmas.
Oh my gosh. It's too funny. Yeah, so it's like things like that. Like, I just think about the people who buy cookbooks, and I think a lot about the people who are, I don't know, kind enough to have any interest in mine. And I just value them, and I value the money you're spending on work I've done, and I value the money you're going to spend on ingredients and the time you're investing in, you know, whether it's reading the book or cooking out of it. Like, those are things I do not take for granted. And I just want to give you as much as I possibly can between like the 2 covers of the book to get like the best value for your investment. Like, that feels really important to me. And
well, without giving away too much of what is in the book, because we do want our listeners to purchase it or take it out from the library, these things are covered in your book, but for the sake of our listeners, could you give a quick rundown of some key items that people should have in their pantries and kitchens? And as you point out, pantry can mean a shelf. It's not like people need a big elaborate pantry.
Yeah, totally. Well, I will first say, like, I really appreciate what you mentioned before about, you know, the simplicity of the recipes. Like, these are definitely like the easiest, simplest recipes I've ever done. And all my recipes have always been pretty simple, but like, these are just like the easiest. And my favorite thing I hear is when anyone takes a look at the book and they find a recipe that they're interested in, and then they realize they already have all the ingredients, they don't have to go to the store. That to me is like the best moment.
Yes.
Like, I live for that. And so in terms of the things that I always keep on hand, they're pretty similar to the things most people keep on hand. And I, you know, included a list of a bunch of these things at the beginning of the book. But like, off the top of my head, some of these are on the list and some aren't. Like, I always have eggs. I always have olive oil. I always have salt. I always have cheese. Grace, my wife, and I have been, I feel like over the course of the pandemic, I don't know, you're asking about self-care. I think I'm going to add one more thing to the list. It's just like, melt cheese on anything. Like, that's all. Yes. I want to eat. So we have that, you know, and then we have like things like pasta and rice and stuff. And I'm a big, big believer in really using your freezer and putting your freezer to work. And so I always have things like chicken and fish in the freezer that are like wrapped really well and in small portions so they defrost easily. Like, again, always thinking of future self. I keep a lot of frozen vegetables, whether they're ones I purchased frozen from, like, you know, the freezer aisle, or if it's, you know, sometimes I'll buy like extra greens and blanch a bunch and then put them like in Ziplocs and stuff. And I throw those into like soup and stuff all the time, like things where they're going to cook down anyway. Like, that's a big go-to for us. Like chicken broth and greens and then some like pasta or something. Like, we eat that like at least once a week. Anyway, so yeah, those are some things, but it's like, it's nothing wild. It's, you know, kind of just, and it should be, you know, what I want to keep in my pantry, which just means like what I want to keep within reach. It's, you know, if you like those things, great. Get those things too. If you don't get those things. Like, you shouldn't like have stuff you don't like or you're not going to use. So I feel like throughout the whole book, you know, I'm always suggesting like variations and things you can serve things with. And just, I feel like I just want to constantly remind people that recipes can be adjusted and you should make them yours because you're the one eating it, you know? Yeah. So yeah. And the same goes for your pantry. Like, yeah.
I really love that you recommended better than bouillon because I have a bunch of it in my fridge. And I feel like you are the first, it's the first cookbook I've ever seen to be like, hey, this stuff,
it's really good. Great. Yeah. Isn't it good?
It's
which kind do you have?
Chicken and beef. I don't have vegetable, which I think is what you might have been speaking about, but I'll get it.
Yeah. I haven't tried the beef one. We are talking about this like bouillon paste. I mean, that might sound not so appealing, but it's great stuff. It's basically, think about how you might have miso paste that you add to hot water to make like super quick, delicious broth. Same thing. And it's basically, you know, it's like a bouillon cube, but not in a dry little cube that's hard to break up. It's like this paste that you can just stir into hot water. And is it like the same thing as like chicken stock you've simmered for, I don't know, 6 hours lovingly on your stove? No, but it's a different thing. And it's totally, it's totally like, I feel like this might sound like a diss and I don't mean it as one. It's like, it's good enough. Like, it's really, like, it's solid and it's dependable and it like doesn't go bad along with the buttermilk.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it because I think so often the like parameter, if you're a like an amateur cook, as I am, Dory, maybe you also identify as one, you're more advanced than I am, but oftentimes you look at a recipe or you look at the things needed and it's like you said, the 6 hour bone broth that you stewed, and it's like immediately that turns me off or makes me feel like I can't do it. So when you have these things that are good enough, it really does make things feel more accessible and attainable.
Yeah, because I agree. And I think that home cooking should feel exactly that way, accessible and attainable. Like, you don't have to make complicated food. I don't want to eat complicated food for every meal. I don't want to eat it for most meals. Like, I like really simple stuff. And I think most people do. And, you know, I just always, I feel like I'm a broken record. Everyone I talk to, I'm just like, when was the last time you had a baked potato? A baked potato is so good. Like, it's delicious. And it's just, you put the potato in the oven, like, end of story. Like, very easy.
I had a baked sweet potato last week.
So good.
For dinner. Yeah. And my husband was like, you're just eating a sweet potato? And I was like, like, yes. Of course. So yes, I appreciate that. You had this quote in the beginning of your book. You say, what I've come to realize is you can believe in home cooking and also sometimes feel tired of it. Which I was like, yes. what would you suggest for people who are in a cooking rut?
I mean, I feel like most people are in one lately. I know I have been. you know, when I started working on this book, it was about a year before the pandemic when I started working on it. I obviously had no idea that it would be coming out at essentially the year anniversary of most of us spending more time than ever at home, you know, if we're lucky enough to do so. Yeah. And I just, yeah, I didn't know I was writing a book that was pretty well timed for this time, but I think it is because as we're talking about like super simple, very accessible recipes, but also, I don't know, I feel like the recipes are fun and there's, I had fun coming up with them. I had fun making them. I have fun when I, you know, flip through the book and remember things that I haven't made in a little bit because, you know, the book went to print a few months ago. There are certain things I make all the time, but there's a few things where I'm like, oh, right, like I got to make that. It's been a bit. And I just feel like if you're in a rut of any kind, whether it's with cooking or whatever it is, whatever, you know, essential activity or inessential one that feels important to you, you know, whether it's like what you do to move your body or whatever it might be. Like if you're in a rut about it, for me at least, the best thing is to do something fun. I think that's the best way to kind of break out of it. So I like to encourage people, like my favorite question, it's the question I ask everyone who comes on my podcast, is what was your favorite thing to eat when you were growing up? So that's a fun question to ask yourself. And then make that thing or buy that thing and eat it. Mm. You know, like I think when you tap into really good and happy memories, which food I think allows us to access pretty easily. I mean, it can bring up not great stuff too. But hopefully everyone has, you know, at least one kind of happy thing associated with food. Like think about what that thing is and then eat it. You know, like that's a way to remember the joy that I think can come with cooking and eating. I think that's a really nice first step. I think also making something you haven't made before, like make it kind of, you know, a little adventure. That's great. I think food can be an escape in a really great way. Like maybe, I don't know, I'm looking out my window right now and snow is covering the ground where I live. And, you know, so maybe like tonight go make a pina colada or something and pretend I'm at a beach, you know, like it food lets you do that kind of stuff, which I think we don't talk about fun just enough. And I think cooking is a way to do that. I mean, cooking's also like tedious and you make a mess and you have to clean it up and all those things that are very real. But I think there's a lot of potential for just joy and fun. And I think leaning into that is a nice way to break out of the rut.
I love the idea of cooking. Excuse me. I love the idea of cooking your favorite dish from your childhood. It's like the ultimate comfort food.
Yeah. And talk about like taking care of oneself. Like,
yeah.
To, you know, like my favorite thing is chicken soup. And when I make it, I feel like I'm taking care of myself. And I feel like I'm in touch with all the women in my family for so many generations who have made the same thing, right? Like I feel so deeply connected. I feel like I'm taking care of my wife. She loves it too. And we sit down and eat it together. Like it's just, it feels so good to make this thing that I love so much. And I feel so capable. Like I'm like, oh, I can make this thing that means so much to me. Like that's a great feeling. So I think that's a really wonderful thing to kind of tap into and remember, like you can provide that for yourself.
You write so beautifully about Grace in the book, and she's just this like lovely presence throughout. And I guess I'm wondering what role has food kind of, and I admit this is a very broad question, but from your perspective, what role has food played in your relationship?
I mean, it's played a huge role. I mean, huge, because obviously it's my career and you know, main interest aside from Below Deck and my dogs. You know, they're all tied in first place, I guess. But you know, it's food is my day-to-day life, and it is all of ours, right? Like I write cookbooks, so it's a bigger part of my day-to-day life. But you know, whether you are, you know, you do what I do for a living, or you work in a restaurant, or, you know, or not, like if you're not involved in the food industry whatsoever, it's still like a central part of your day. So, you know, this just sounds really like simple and basic, but I just think it's worth saying, like, our day-to-day lives are our whole lives, right? Like that's what makes up our lives. So my day-to-day life revolves around food, and it revolves also very much around my marriage. You know, Grace and I have both worked from home our entire relationship. Like, not only is, I think, this new cookbook very well suited for right now, like, our lives were very well suited for a pandemic, which is not something I ever knew before, you know, living through one. But we have been used to being like home together all day with each other for years. And, you know, food is this way where, you know, it's the moment we're sitting at the table together, or we're sitting on the couch next to each other while we're watching TV. And it's this way where I think I'm able to tap into just, I don't know, I don't mean to sound so cheesy, but just like how much I love her. Like, yeah. It lets me really be considerate in a way that I really appreciate. Like, I don't know, we're watching a commercial for something. Everything goes back to TV, apparently. But, you know, something pops up on a commercial and she'll be like, oh man, like that looks so good, or whatever. I'm making this up. But then I, like, you know, I put that in my little mental filing cabinet, and then I'm like, yeah, we should have nachos. Mm. Like, it all goes back to TV and melted cheese. So, you know, I get to, be considerate and just get to express like, hey, I'm listening, I'm paying attention. Like, you mentioned this the other day and now I'm making it. And I think it also, you know, food and cooking let me, in all the ways we've talked about, take care of myself. And I think that's a really important thing within my relationship, you know, within any relationship, like doing whatever you need to do to make yourself and keep yourself as satisfied and happy and present as possible. Like, that changes how I, you know, react and like behave in reaction to the other person that I'm next to, you know? So it's sort of like that, yeah, put your mask on first type of thing for me. Yeah.
So we're just going to take a short break and we will be right back.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time, and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters, and then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs. Oh. Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Okay, we're back.
I so much of what I hear you saying and what I kind of gather from your book is food is this, and cooking is an expression of like, of love for others. And, you know, I see that a lot. Like Dory's gotten very into baking challah and baking bread, which is like not just something, Dory, I'm putting words in your mouth, but that you do for yourself, but you also like give it to your son and it's, your husband loves it. And it's, that's something that I really thought about as I was doing kind of work examining like my disordered eating and my body image issues is remembering the role that food has played in a loving way in my life, because so often it was something I've had such a contentious relationship with. And so I really appreciate that you talk about that in this cookbook. You have this whole beautiful essay called On the Worthiness of Our Bodies. This is, as I mentioned earlier, I think when I started kind of getting choked up reading your cookbook. What inspired you to share that side of yourself in this book?
Sure. I so appreciate you sharing that about your own like personal experience and that sort of tension between like having a disordered relationship to eating, which I totally identify with. I have experienced the same for most of my life. And also remembering food can be really loving and not scary. And I mean, I don't mean to put words in your mouth. I feel like. So the essay that you are talking about is, you know, it's definitely to me the kind of heart of the book and the most vulnerable part of the book. And it's the part that I'm just so happy it's in there. And what it is, for anyone who, you know, obviously hasn't read it, it's this like short essay that's just kind of like a reflection on what we're talking about right now, just sort of like body image and essentially like internalized fat phobia and stuff. And I thought it was really important to include because I wrote a book that has healthy in the subtitle. You know, this is a book of healthy comfort food recipes. That's, you know, how it's packaged, how it's sold. And I really just wanted to interrogate throughout the whole book, like, what does healthy mean? And what does it mean to me? And, you know, I think it's a word that's for all of us to define for ourselves. And for me, it's been a word that's been really hard to define because I used to confuse it with skinny. I thought they meant the same thing. And in learning that healthy and skinny are not, in fact, synonyms, that has helped me just kind of detangle myself from the incredibly fraught relationship I've had with eating. I've always had this pretty positive relationship with cooking, even though I think at times it was like for me a real control thing. Honestly, writing cookbooks, it's like, what a amazing sense of control over food. Like, I'm going to tell you down to like, you know, the tablespoon, like what to do. And having had a pretty disordered relationship with food for so long, you know, I do think that's definitely part of what drew me to my work in food. But I think it's also what's always reminded me that on the other side of that coin is a lot of pleasure and a lot of fun and a lot of just, I don't know, being really in touch with my like intuitive just self. And I think that it's important to acknowledge in a cookbook, yeah, that's about healthy food, to really just like talk about this. And, you know, I am really proud to have written a healthy cookbook that's not about weight loss. I think that's really important. And yeah, I just feel like I'm rambling, but this is like such an important topic. I'm so glad you brought it up because it's meaningful to me to hear what it meant to you and your reaction to it. Because I know that for so long, in this whole topic that we're talking about, like I felt so lonely. I felt so isolated in these feelings. I felt like for years I was selling this really happy version of food, like here, buy this cookbook. It's, you know, happy recipes. But then I was feeling guilty about what I was eating. I was feeling scared of what I was eating. I was restricting things. I was not trusting myself. And you know, in writing this essay and in sharing it in the book, almost everyone I've spoken to, like, brings up this essay. And that is really telling to me because I know that I'm not alone in feeling these things. And to feel less alone in this feels really powerful. And yeah, so yeah, thank you for sharing your reaction to it, because that is the point, you know, to feel more connected and less alone. So I know I do right now, like in this present moment. And that's that's a big deal, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
You also write that watching The Matrix helped reframe your thinking about diet culture.
That was very good timing. Really impressed with how you just
wanted to, you know, introduce some levity to this serious conversation. Yep. Although you do say that. can you talk about why?
Yeah. So just as all roads go back to television and melted cheese for me, they really? Also go. Yeah, they also go back to Grace, my wife, who has been just the most magnificent support in my life in so many ways, including helping me really even identify what a pretty miserable place I was in terms of my relationship with my body. And she, of the many things she kind of, you know, really held my hand through, one of the things she suggested was that I finally watch The Matrix, which I had never seen, because I was too busy watching Below Deck, apparently. And she just kept saying, like, Julia, diet culture is The Matrix. And I was like, okay, I think I know what you mean. She's like, you just have to watch the movie. And so finally I gave in and I watched it. And it's like so not my type of movie, but I really liked it. I mean, it was popular for a reason. And it just all made sense to me. And I was like, oh, diet culture is The Matrix. Like, it is The Matrix. And for anyone who hasn't seen it, I'm sure I was probably the only one, but it's just like, you know, how do you explain The Matrix? It's like, you think this is the world, but it's not. Like, there's other options. And that is how I felt about diet culture. I didn't know there were other options. Like, I thought being fat was something to be terrified of, because that's what I was taught and modeled, and, you know, that you should push against that. I was taught that fat was unhealthy, which it isn't inherently, you know, and I took these things as truth and I didn't question them. I didn't know you could question them. So now when I think about these things, I'm like, oh yeah, it's just The Matrix. Like, there's another option. And it's just really, it's given me this really helpful framework, and it totally sounds silly, but it's like, I don't know, it's been really helpful for me. So just like I like sharing, you know, here's things to do with the other 3 cups of buttermilk, I also want to share, like, here's what I've learned in, like, therapy and in my marriage that has been really helpful, because I think there's a place for that in a cookbook that's about healthy comfort. You know, I think this conversation is important. It's just as important as the recipes, if not more so.
No, I mean, I definitely chuckled when I read that, but I was also like, I think I get it. I would guess that this is probably the first cookbook that mentions The Matrix.
I mean, I would be so curious to know if that's true or not. And
maybe there is a Matrix cookbook. We don't know.
I mean, who knows? Who knows?
I wanted to ask you actually about a photo in the book where you are wearing a t-shirt that says food justice is social justice. And I'm just wondering, what does food justice mean to you?
That's a great question. And I will just quickly say that t-shirt you're referring to, it's the back of a t-shirt from an organization called Drive Change, which is based in New York City. And it's a reentry program and for young people coming out of just the criminal, quote unquote, justice system. And it's an amazing organization. So I just want to give some credit to that t-shirt. And I'm glad you noticed it. Food justice, I think, is a term that means a lot of different things. And I think just like healthy, I think it's something people define in very different ways. And I'm always very interested in how people define it. But I will tell you what it means to me and not just tell you that it means different things. To me, food justice is the just total understanding that we all have a right to healthy, affordable, accessible, like nutritious, fresh food that's, you know, culturally appropriate, by which I mean, like, It represents who we are and who we come from and who we feel connected to. And that is just a human right, and doing whatever we can to make that available and possible for everyone, you know, not just ourselves, but the people around us. So I think a lot of people go about fighting for food justice in a number of ways, whether it's, you know, I don't know, like working on behalf of people who work in like poultry processing plants during COVID, whether it's, you know, buying from your farmer's market, whether it's, you know, making other decisions about your ingredients, whether it's tipping the person who's delivering your takeout, like all of these things go back to food justice. I think we're all involved in food justice or food injustice, whether we know it or not. I think if you eat and you spend money on food, ingredients or prepared food of some kind, like you're making decisions about the food chain and the food system. And I think a lot of people who are involved in those systems want to make us feel like we actually don't have that much decision-making power, that much control, or that much influence. But I mean, we definitely do. So yeah, again, some rambling thoughts. But yeah, it's a big, big umbrella term. And in terms of the back of that t-shirt that says food justice is social justice, for me, I don't know, the reason I was like, oh, I'll, you know, put this t-shirt on when we're taking the photos, like that was a very intentional decision. And I mean, I'm a big fan of using cookbooks as kind of Trojan horses to kind of introduce some ideas or just not introduce them, but just share them or echo them, you know, talking about diet culture and a healthy cookbook. Like that's a good example of it. And in terms of choosing to wear that t-shirt, I just think it's an important message. And for me, all of the big, big, important issues in the world that I think are the issues we all need to face and respond to, you know, things like climate change, things like racial injustice and white supremacy and misogyny and all these things, you know, these are huge, huge topics, issues that affect all of us. And for me, when I look, you know, all those things feel really overwhelming to me and scary. And I'm like, what can I possibly do? And oh my gosh, such a mess. And But when I look at these things through the lens of food, all of a sudden I feel like, oh, I can do something. It feels much more tangible. It makes me feel like it makes sense. Like some climate change stuff I feel like is like over my head. And then I'm like, oh no, like look at the conditions this farmer is working in, or look at what happened to this, you know, field of, you know, I don't know, melons or something, whatever. Like, you know, you can see the impact, you know, look at, you know, the meat industry and, you know, cattle farms and all these things. Like, I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, I see what's happening here. I see what's happening in the ocean. You know, food makes things make sense for me. And that feels really valuable. And it also provides so many answers, like Drive Change, that program. You know, I think about all the issues that are so wrong with like the prison industrial complex in our country. I mean, it's so, so broken. And then there's an organization like that that's using food to respond to that. And it makes sense, and it's practical, and it's like purposeful. And it's an answer. It's not the answer, but it's one of the answers. And I just think we need all the answers. And I think food can provide a lot of them, which is, I don't know, makes me feel hopeful in a world that can sometimes feel not so hopeful.
One thing I know, I think we've both Dora and I have kind of been reflecting on, but certainly I have, as I kind of, you know, through reading other people writing about this topic, I have realized how whitewashed my own cookbooks are, how I have really just collected cookbooks by white authors. And, you know, it, like the white supremacy is like a blinder on me, and I hadn't even noticed until I think I read an essay maybe possibly Simi Nosrat had written. Mm-hmm. And so, and I know this is something that you have written about and done a lot of work toward. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts on how we can actively diversify our cookbooks, and also how we can better support diversity within the world of cooking. As from the consumer side.
Yeah. I have so many thoughts on this, and I will just give you my practical thoughts as opposed to just my beliefs about it. So, okay, one, buy cookbooks written by authors of color or authors from various marginalized communities, you know, by queer authors and so on. Two, buy these books at your local independent bookstores, preferably bookstores that are owned, you know, by people who are not white, by, you know, Black-owned bookstores. Three, even if you are not using Amazon to buy your books, or if you are, leave reviews of these books, positive, glowing reviews of these books on Amazon. So many people look up books. Amazon's the first thing that comes up, and the first review or two they'll see will really have an impact on their decision about whether or not to get it. That makes a big difference. I would say also, like, if you are, I don't know, if you work at like a university or, you know, involved in something in your town or something, if you're involved in any kind of thing that invites people to speak in any way, suggest authors to come speak and pay them to do so. That is really big. So those are just some practical things. And I think most importantly, I mean, the thing that needs to change is not just, you know, increasing the, like, you know, just range of authors who get published, and not only who get published, but who get the right kind of support to succeed in publishing, by which I mean money to go towards promotion, to go towards people like, you know, to be just totally like transparent. Like, I, you know, have enjoyed your podcast for so long, but I didn't reach out to you directly. Like, the publicist from, you know, my publishing company reached out to you, arrange all the logistics. All I had to do was show up, right? Someone else made that happen. What a joy to just come and talk to you about my work and my feelings about food. I mean, it really, I mean, it's like wonderful, but you know, there's things that happen behind the scenes to make this happen. So it's not just about getting published. It's about getting supported to really see that book soar, because you can write the best cookbook in the world, but if no one knows about it, you know, I mean, that's not the, like, you know, you can, same thing can be said about music or whatever, but it's just, it's important that people are given the support and platform. I think the most important thing that has to change is not just diversifying the books and the authors, but diversifying the people who get to make these decisions. So agents and editors and publishers, that's huge. It's, I think, happening. I think it's totally overdue, but I think it's happening. But in terms of what consumers can do about that, you can let, you know, publishing houses know that this matters to you. And you can look at your favorite cookbooks, look at the spine of the book. That's always, which, by which I mean like the part that sticks out on your bookshelf. That's what we call the spine. You can look on there and it will tell you the publishing company. If you open to the title page, you'll see all of these companies have, you know, websites and PR people and stuff. And at the end of the day, the publishing industry is like any industry. It's cares about its image, you know? And I think as consumers, if you let them know, like, you're paying attention to this, you're watching who they're publishing and, you know, that, I think that's valuable. I think that can't hurt to do, just like, you know, calling your state representative and stuff. Yeah. Like, I don't think it's going to change things, you know, today, but I think, like, yeah, if enough people do that, if they get 10 phone calls or 10 emails, like, they'll notice that. Like, and that's not a big ask. Like, you know, 10 people to write a note. Like, you know, if you're in a cookbook club, like, there's a lot of those. They're so great. They're so cool. You know, pay attention to which cookbook you're choosing for that cookbook club. And, you know, if you notice your cooking from a lot of cookbooks that are coming from the same publishing house, like, there's a handful that publish most cookbooks, you know, pay attention to what they're publishing and demand, you know, or just ask, like, that, you know, hey, like, we notice you don't, like, have many books written by Black authors, or many books written by Indigenous authors, or books written by people living with disabilities. Like, that's a huge hole in the cookbook industry. Like, there's so little written about the kind of intersection of cooking and disability. And so many people live with various disabilities. Like, that's a huge gap. So I think if people hear that, like, there's a demand for that, like, hopefully they'll respond to the demand. So, yeah, those are some ideas.
Those are great. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's
really, yeah,
really helpful.
I just think good to remember in general, like, you know, it's one thing to, like, it's really easy to just talk about these things and, like, oh, I wish it were different. And then it's like, oh, but you can actually do something to,
yeah,
make that difference actually happen. Like, you totally can. And I think a lot of publishers, cookbook publishers, magazine publishers, you know, people who get to make decisions about whose voices get heard, right? Like, who gets invested in. I honestly think a lot of them underestimate how smart and how capable their audiences are, like the people who buy their products, whether it's books or newspapers or magazines or whatever. And I think there's a lot of, just as you said, Kate, like a lot of whitewashing of books. You know, I think there's the assumption that they're written for white audiences. Things need to be explained in a way, like, and I think just, I don't know, I think sometimes, like, something that can kind of light a fire under people is being told that they're being underestimated. So I think, you know, just maybe keep that in mind if that helps propel you to, like, you know, yeah, write those Amazon reviews, write to the editor, you know, like, letters to the editor have been around for a long time, like, for a reason. So, yeah, like, hold people accountable, especially if they've been asked to. Like, if a publishing company posted a black square on their Instagram feed in, like, June, like, hold them to it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I love you gave us really actionable things to do. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, I write recipes, so that's what I'm all about. Like, here's how you do the thing.
Well, before we let you go, and thank you for spending so much time with us, we have to ask, do you have a skincare routine? And if so, what is it?
I have really enjoyed talking to you, and I appreciate all the questions and the opportunity to just share, you know, these, like, tangible things, and I could talk to you for so much longer. So thank you, first of all. And I have zero skincare routine, which, like, astonishes my wife on a daily basis. I wash my face sometimes with, like, water. Like, if I'm in the shower, I, like, will, you know, put my face under the shower. I don't. In the winter, which it is now, like, I use, I don't know, you should really ask Grace about this. She has, like, you could have, like, a 6-hour podcast. She's, like, cares so much about this. She knows so much about it. She's passionate about it. And it is just, like, not a place where we overlap. And so sometimes I reach for one of the things that just says, like, face lotion, and I'll put it on, like, if my face feels dry in the winter. But, like, that's it. I've never worn makeup. I mean, I have, like, nothing to offer here. Nothing. Zero. Sorry.
No, I love that and appreciate that. So thank you.
I try to remember sunscreen. I try, but I forget, which is so bad. I should wear it, right? I think.
Yes, but, like, also sometimes no routine is the routine, right? Like,
yeah.
There doesn't need to be one.
Yeah. I drink a lot of water.
Yes. That's
now
the
you're
answer.
Speaking Kate's language.
I mean, why am I doing this? Julia, We just love this book so much, and we are big fans of yours, so it's been a real thrill to have you on the podcast. Could you let our listeners know where they can find you both online and where, let's say, they can buy this beautiful new book or any of your books?
Well, thank you so much for having me on. This was a pleasure, and honestly, it flew by. I just looked at the clock, and I can't believe what time it is. You can find me online on Instagram. My handle is just my last name, which is Tertian. Sorry to my brother and all my cousins, but I took that. And I have a website, which is just my name, juliatertian.com, which has all the information about everything, everywhere you can get the book, everything about, like, fun virtual book tour conversations I'm having. You know, I have a podcast. All of that is there. It's all there. juliatertian.com. You can get the book through there. I link to, like, my favorite local bookstore where I can personalize a copy for you if you want. Like, everything is there. Just myname.com. Not myname.com. JuliaTertian.com. I don't know what happens if you go to myname.com. Don't hold me to that.
Well, thank you, Julia.
Well, thank you guys so much. This was really fun. And I appreciate your time. And just everything you shared during this too. So thank you.
She's just such a dream. I wish we could hang out with her.
Yeah, all the things.
All the things.
Can we discreetly invade her friend circle and just kind of make ourselves part of the world?
I know. Do you think she'd care?
All of a sudden, we moved to New York State.
Yeah.
Like, what are y'all doing here in the middle of a pandemic? And we're like, well, we quarantined for 14 days and now we're part of your friend group. So
hope that's cool.
Is that all right with you?
Cool. Thanks.
I also just love, like, I did get weepy reading the cookbook, and but just the focus on, like, on feeding others and kind of celebrating other people, and it just was, you know, talking about how so much many of her recipes were inspired by cooking for her wife and for the members of her community, and I just found that really moving, and it reminded me of, like, of why I love food and reminded me of my family. I don't know, it just was really moving, and I'm going to ramble for 1 second. Like, in thinking about kind of, you know, trying to exit diet culture as much as we can, like, remembering the many things that food can be is so empowering, I find, because so often it's just been turned into something bad and that's it. And that's, you know, that's, it can be so many things and have such meaningful impact in so many people's lives. So I just thought her book was so moving.
I agree.
Oh, well, the photograph of the phone bed that my daughter, my strep throat daughter, made me is up on our Instagram.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's on the gram. If you want to see what it looks like when your kid goes through their sock drawer and takes out a lot of socks and makes you a really cute phone bed, we've got you covered.
It's really cute.
And my intention was to put my phone to bed every night last week, and I majorly failed at this.
Oh no. Well, it is what it is.
Well, part of it was because I was working till like 11 o'clock every night, and then
yes,
and my phone would be dead, so I needed to charge it. It's a long story, a lot of logistics, but I'm gonna get back to it. I like using the phone bed. It really brightens my day.
Aw,
yeah, you know,
that's so lovely. And what about this week?
Okay. I like exercising.
Yep.
I like pumping iron. I like stretching. I like moving, walking, running, biking.
Yep.
But if I don't do it first thing in the morning, I'm not going to do it. I really have to start my day with physical fitness if it's going to happen. It's not going to happen after I've been like sitting and working and then at 3:30, I'm not going to get up and exercise. It's just, it's miserable. I don't like it. I like doing it in the morning. So I need to schedule in my movement so that I make time to do it. Because I tend to be like, I need to work. I'm not going to exercise. And then I miss exercising. My body hurts if I don't do it. So morning movement sessions with Kate Spencer are going in the calendar.
I love that. Morning movement sessions.
Morning movement. That also kind of sounds like a bowel movement session. But
oh, yeah, it's true. Also something that's nice to do in the morning.
Very nice to do. Might be weird to put it on your calendar. Might not.
But
though,
you know, if you put it on your calendar, I don't judge.
I know, but can you imagine too if you stuck to it like every day, 8 a.m.?
I mean, that's the dream, I think.
It is the dream, yeah. Scheduled poop. Okay.
Scheduled poop.
Anyway. Last week, Dory, tell me what you were intending, because you had some stuff going on.
Yes, I was. I wanted to get caught up on some life admin stuff, and I did.
Ooh.
Not everything, but I did get caught up on some annoying things that had just been sort of like lingering.
Ugh, life admin stuff is the worst stuff. So to get caught up on it is very impressive.
Yeah. So I'm feeling good about that. And then this week, so we're having a bit of a schedule change because our current nanny is leaving. We have a new nanny starting and her schedule is going to be slightly different.
So I'm going to have more time with Henry in the morning. So I'm thinking, like, I definitely want to build in time for a morning walk with him every morning.
Oh, yeah. Remember you were doing that at the beginning of Quar?
Well, I was doing afternoon walks with him.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And but he was really,
in a stroller.
Yeah, and he will still be in a stroller. Okay. He's not quite at the point where you can, like, actually walk with him without the fear of him just bolting into the street.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. But, and he still really likes a stroller walk. I mean, who doesn't? I would enjoy being pushed around in a stroller. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I would too. I would all very much like it.
And, you know, I have been having some days lately where the end of the day has arrived and I've been like, oh, I didn't go outside today.
Yeah.
And I think this will be a good way of just like making sure that I get outside.
I think that is so, I've been having the same thing where it's like, all of a sudden it's 4 o'clock and I'm like, oh, I should breathe air outside.
Totally.
And feel the sun on my skin.
Yeah.
Well, I like a refreshing morning walk, especially, I mean, I hate to say this because we are the spoiled Californians, but like it's getting so beautiful here right now. This is kind of like our spring.
I know. It's really nice out.
Yeah, sorry everybody, but it's pretty here right now. Orange trees are blooming and smelling good. It's when the jasmine starts.
I was just thinking that. I was like, the other day, like, I was on my way. I came home and got out of the car, and I was like, oh, mm-hmm. I love when LA smells like this.
Ugh, me too.
I remember I moved to LA like when it smelled like this, and I was just like, this place is heaven.
It smells so good.
Yeah. So. You're right. I should like relish this time.
Yeah. I mean, I need the reminder as well. It's like the best smelling time. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll go outside and do some sniffing around.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, Dory, it's been a pleasure as always. Listeners, we thank you.
We do.
For coming on this ride with us.
Yep. Forever 35 is hosted and produced by me, Dory Shafrir, and Kate Spencer, produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Sam Reed is our project manager. Our network partner is Acast, and we will talk to you all again very soon.
Bye.
Bye.